from the Sun, and the Jupiter simply encounters them and feels the attractive force toward the Sun. I don't see any curve required, therefore I don't see how energy is added to or subtracted from Jupiter, and I think Jupiter can be in that orbit forever, is my belief. Over to you, John.
Okay, yeah, fine business, Vic. It's an interesting discussion. I'm going to dig into this article a little bit more. I guess the only thing that still bothers me is the fact that the cable, if you replace the cable with gravitons, yeah, there is a layer or a ring of gravitons which have gotten out to Jupiter's orbit, which is constantly correcting them, but they came over a distance that delayed them, if they're going at the speed of light, delayed them by one light hour. So the acceleration that they are going to cause on Jupiter is towards a position that is, I guess, a light hour out of date. That's the only thing I'm just having a little hard time understanding. But I won't eat up any more time on it. I think maybe have some other questions on other topics. Anyway, back to you, Vic. Enjoy the conversation. Back to that.
Yeah, let me try one more time, though. If Jupiter wasn't there, and the Sun is isotropically emitting gravitons, all gravitons on the spherical surface that has the radius of where Jupiter is going to be, all those gravitons on that spherical surface, every one of those gravitons is 1 hour old. Every one of them. Now I add Jupiter, and I move Jupiter at its speed. Some of those gravitons are hitting Jupiter, and it feels a force toward the center of the Sun. Those gravitons hitting Jupiter are an hour old. The ones that are in front of Jupiter, that it's going to hit a little bit later in its orbital velocity, are also an hour old. The ones behind Jupiter that it used to be looking at are an hour old. All the gravitons in the vicinity of Jupiter, forward, reverse, above, below, every one of the gravitons in the vicinity of Jupiter were originally emitted by the Sun, whether Jupiter is there or not, every one of those gravitons is exactly 1 hour old. I don't see any differential effect on those individual gravitons as they touch Jupiter. You see where I'm going on that one, John? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
John first, go ahead.
Could we look at it as a Newtonian magnet with the center of the Sun, a platinum disk, and the planet rolling around the edge of this magnet, and the magnet is only preventing centrifugal reaction?
We're sort of backwards in angular displacement than from the true position of the Sun. I understand they're all, you're saying because they're all 1 hour old, causing Jupiter to accelerate not towards the actual position that Jupiter sees the Sun at, but actually 1 hour angularly delayed, sort of looking backwards. I know what you're just saying. You're saying that because it is this is like an isotemporal surface or something of gravitons, that they would be delayed by the same amount of time. But I guess I'm not too sure in seeing that. Anyway, back to Ned.
Yeah, I should have specified John number two instead of John number one. John number two, which is VDH. Every one of those gravitons is a vector force, and when you encounter that graviton, the vector force is back toward the center of the Sun, no other direction. Every graviton you touch creates a attractive force toward the center of the Sun. That's where they came from. They're all a straight line, isotropically, and I'm now studying the group of gravitons that are all on this surface, 1 hour old, that's how far they are away from the Sun. And when you encounter any one of them, they came from the center of the Sun, they create an attractive force toward the center of the Sun, no other direction. front of me, the ones right at me at Jupiter, and the ones behind me are all identical, all producing a force directly toward the Sun. I don't see a mechanism by which they can create a force to speed me up, slow me down, move me up, move me down. The force they create is exactly toward the center of the Sun. The fact that every one of them is 1 hour old doesn't matter if you first consider the problem before you add Jupiter, then add Jupiter. And Jupiter is a minor perturbation compared to something so massive like the Sun. I may be wrong, but that's my way of looking at it. John, number two, one more comment. Go back to you, John. BDH, K2RIW.
Okay, that's just the way I could see it, is that since they're delayed, that the angular position would have to be different. I'm going to turn it back to you, Dick, and then make them pick up the other comment. Go ahead.
Okay, now what I think John number one is saying is that now if I use a magnetic force, the magnetrons, if there are such things, emitted by a magnet, if I had a unipolar magnet, I know it doesn't exist, but if I had a unipolar magnet positioned right where the Sun is, and it's issuing magnetic waves that go out isotropically in all directions, again, at the Jupiter distance, all of those magnetons, are 1 hour old, and if Jupiter is made out of ferrite material, and it's creating an attractive force, I don't see how that force would be speeding up Jupiter, slowing it down, would be producing, those magnetic lines would always be going straight back to the Sun, and they would keep Jupiter in its orbit. The nice thing about gravity is that it obeys an inverse square law. The nice thing about magnetism, it obeys an inverse square law. So I think it would keep Jupiter in a beautiful circular orbit, if that's the way Jupiter was issued in this orbit. I don't think it would, the magnetically attracted Jupiter, I don't think it would speed up or slow down. What do you think, John number one? The KC2, WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet?
I concur, Dick. I believe we could set up a model of this little flat disk magnet, the orbit of Jupiter, the size of the orbit of Jupiter. And let's say we had a little ball bearing out there, and we rotated the magnet, and Jupiter's following it. It would continue to follow it basically the same way. The only thing the magnet does is prevent that centripetal reaction. And I think that really is exactly what you're saying in graviton.
Yeah, the nice thing about gravity is I can have a unipolar attractor like the Sun. In the case of every magnet you and I can put our hands on, John, number one, they are all dipole devices. So the only way I can get a magnetic field from the center of my model, which represents the Sun, out to my planet that represents Jupiter, is that I have to aim the dipole of that magnet toward Jupiter, toward my BB that's on a disk, and the disk is now going to rotate. And now I've got to, as my Jupiter rotates around the center that represents Sun, in order to keep that magnetic attraction constant, I have to rotate that dipole magnet in the center called Sun. And depending on how I rotate that magnet in the center, if I speed it up a little bit or slow it down, I can be adding energy of rotation or slowing down energy of rotation of the orbit of Jupiter around the center. So now our model gets a little bit more complicated. I'm going to have to leave you guys pretty soon, but you see where I'm worried about this one, John number one. WGB, K2RIW.
Oh, I see what you're saying, Dick. I understand. I appreciate the net, and I thank you for your time. I know you've got to go. KC2WGB.
Yeah, for you crazy people that have listened this late to TechNet number 1324 in my sequential numbering system that I began about 15 years ago, and since I've recently done a calculation, I think I've missed some numbers in there. I think we're over 1400, but we'll keep using the same numbers, 1324, all starting back in September of 1982. You crazy people that like this jazz, Mel and I and the others that gather here are going to try to do it again next Sunday. We're going to get a little bit closer to the bottom of what Mother Nature is telling us, but we're never going to learn it all. But that's the fun of it all. We think we're educating each other. We make some mistakes, but we slowly find out about that and hopefully correct them. By you all, try to be kind to each other and try to enjoy the process. Mel, K2KEY, good health, and hope those diagnostic measurements work well. And you can ask each one of those technicians how many REMs they're giving you if you want to, if you want to know. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, as if it'll make any difference. I still got to go for the test or essential because I questioned the doctor. I said, oh boy, more. He says, you got to know exactly where you stand at this point. So it looks like, you know, what is my future as far as treatment, medications, and all that. These are open questions. So asking questions more than that at this point, I guess I'll just have to trust in everything going correct, really. Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you, Charlene, family, all the other people on frequency. Thank you very much for joining us. Also, have a great holiday this coming week. And I just finished a book, in fact. I've done a lot of reading, put up a lot of reading. One of the interesting books, basically, that I just finished, apropos to what we were just discussing, is Astronomers of the 20th Century. Very fascinating what has gone on in the last, and the thinking and the instrumentation and all since the year 1900. So, with that, thank you again, everybody. 73, and as Dick says, we'll try to do it again next week. This is K2KEY. Good night, all.
Good night, Bob Mel. And I think you recommend that book. Is that true?
Well, fascinating reading, Dick. I picked it up for a buck, you know. Like I say, when I get into the city, I go to some of these secondhand bookstores, and a lot of these books, they lay there indefinitely. Nobody buys it, so for a dollar, you get yourself a lot of nice books. I've picked up a heck of a lot of nice books that have, just, I guess, you know, such a small audience for them. So I enjoyed reading it. About 500 pages, but quite fascinating going and delving into all the different experiments and the different science, you know, physicists and the scientists and astronomers and all what they thought and how they came up. And they described different telescopes that, you know, came up in the last 100 years. Boy, there's an awful lot of telescopes that were built and all. So it's quite fascinating to read, Dick, over.
I'm convinced you enjoyed it. We used to have a used bookstore out here in Suffolk County called Acadia Bookstore. And they had an extremely good used book technical section. And every time I walked into that store, I knew I was going to drop quite a bit of money and walk out with quite a few pounds of stuff. Or they saw me coming down the road. The prices were just too good. Unfortunately, they no longer exist. Maybe they've moved somewhere else. Bye-bye, you all. K2RIW clear.
Same thing with me. Sometimes I have to watch myself because I've got to get these books home from the city on the train. So I said to myself, listen, you know, limits, because even in a bag or however I pack them up, it's the weight is there. And so it's a pleasure. You know, I get down to the village and area, and one store has a lot of them down there. So if you ever get a chance, you know, to cruise those places, Dick, I think you'd really enjoy it. You'd find a myriad of different kinds of books on different subjects, and some even date back quite a bit. I've got books here that date back just to a little bit past the turn of the century on early electricity and all, written by the Edison Company and things. So, you know, things like that. It's just nice to peruse through, and for, like I say, if you see them cheap enough, you will, you know, get a heck of a lot out of you know, really some of the ancient stuff, but, you know, just to look through it. The pictures alone are worth it. 73, Dick, talk to you next week. Have a good night.
The next time I go to a field day, you're going to have to show me your book library and your laboratory. sounds fascinating. Unfortunately, I can't show you mine. A little bit too sloppy. Bye-bye for now, Mel.
Keep it on your calendar.
Hey, Mel, I got a good book for you also.
John.
Quantum Gravity by Smolin. Excellent book. Not very big, but a lot of information in it. And I just wish you and Dick the best of health. And get well. Get completely well. And we're going to keep this going. Good night, guys. Everybody on the net, thank you very much. KC2WGB.
Thank you. You mentioned in this book, it covers just about every one of these businesses and the people that were involved in the last 100 years in astronomical observances. So I think I saw a reference to him, John. But thank you anyhow. Yeah, I'd say it's a fabulous subject that can go on and on. I think the astronomy has to be the number one of the natural sciences, over.
Oh, yes, Mel. That was one I really enjoyed. I was in it for about 25 years. The scene is just so bad in New York, you can't really appreciate it. But if you do travel and you can afford to take one with you, it's an enjoyable hobby, and it's a very peaceful hobby. Very good.
I have myself a telescope that's not very effective here. It lets you really go down to the beach area here. So. But whatever I can see with that telescope, which is not really a great instrument, but, you know, it's just to look up there, it's fascinating. Good night. Take care.
Good night, gentlemen. KC2WGB.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Radio Newsline report number 1736 with a release date of Friday, November 19th, 2010. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The National Telecommunications and Information Agency proposes a fast track for spectrum reallocation that has little impact on ham radio. The Czech Republic issues its first 500 kilohertz ham radio permit. FM Simplex in the satellite subbands is wreaking havoc with ham radio space operations. And a group opposed to a ham radio antenna installation says it will ask the ARRL for help. Find out details on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1736, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
The National Telecommunications and Information Agency, which is the White House version of the FCC, is proposing a fast-track approach to the reallocation of 115 megahertz of radio spectrum for wireless broadband now, increasing to a total of 500 megahertz within 10 years. So far, the possible losses to ham radio appear minimal. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in our newsroom with more.
If one looks at the National Telecommunications and Information Administration's proposed fast-track reallocation of 115 megahertz of radio spectrum for wireless broadband now, and the total of 500 megahertz within 10 years, and does so from a ham radio point of view, the hobby comes out looking pretty much unscathed. The only amateur radio spectrum on the list is part of the 2.3 gigahertz band, where hams already are secondary users. And if this refarming plan is adopted, amateur radio comes away with little in the way of losses. But this is not the only plan that will be put forth. The FCC is still in the process of finalizing its reallocation recommendations, and various industry groups will likely be lobbying for theirs. In the end, whatever Washington bureaucrats bring up is likely to be a composite of what the NTIA, the FCC, and other interests agree on. That's just the way things work in the Washington, D.C. political arena. Perhaps more important for ham radio to consider is the fact that no matter what plan is chosen, there will be various services displaced from the spectrum that they now inhabit. This means that they will be searching for a few bands to go to, and it is this secondary fallout that could pose more of a threat to the ham radio bands that quarantine 20 megahertz and above than the initial refarming plan itself. Those of you who enjoy wading through government documents can find this one in PDF format at tinyurl.com/2BQ3694. Meanwhile, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, watching this one from the newsroom in the City of Angels. Jim?
More on this plan in future Amateur Radio Newsline reports. A new 500 kilohertz operating permit has been issued in the Czech Republic. The recipient is OK2BVG, who has been given permission to operate between 501 and 504 kilohertz with a maximum of 20 watts effective radiated power until September 1st of 2011. As we go to air, 11 countries in IARU Region 1 have now authorized amateur or experimental operations in this part of the 500 kilohertz band. More information can be found on the IARU Region 1 website. It's in cyberspace at www.iaru-r1.org. Ham operators are once again being asked to not use 145.8 to 146 megahertz for terrestrial point-to-point casual communication. This is because such operations are devastating to weak signal ground-to-space and space-to-ground satellite operations. Take a listen.
Да, Володя, принимаю тебя. Но почему-то слабенько, Володя. Не такой слабенький в данный момент. Не знаю, в чем дело, вроде бы прохождение. Петерзук Зинаида. РКТФ Петерзук Зинаида.
That's from the FM interference on HO68 uplink as recorded by OZ9AEC on November the 9th. Two FM stations can be heard speaking in Russian. The weaker one is barely audible in the noise, but the stronger one holds the potential of capturing the HO68 receiver and blocking weak signal operations using CW single sideband narrowband digital mode. OZ9AEC has posted the full QSO between these stations operating on the HO68 uplink to the YouTube.com. It very graphically illustrates the problem that operating FM simplex operation can be on 145.8 to 146 and 435 to 438, which can cause ham radio satellite operation interference. It can be heard at tinyurl.com/35YQKHL. Some good news in the world of ZX. With less than 60 days to go until the Spratly Island ZX operation hits the amateur band, the Z-Expedition team leader, Chris Dmitrijevic, VK3FY, has announced it'll be extended to allow participation in the CQ Worldwide 160-meter CW contest. Felix Gary, VK4FUQ of the WIA News, has more.
While DX0DX was to go QRT on the 24th of January, a couple of individual and team members have asked if they could stay on air for that contest when it ends at 22 hours UTC Sunday the 30th of January. This will now extend DX0DX activation to the 1st of February 2011. In another development, the pre-assembly, erection and tuning of 8 HF-Yaki antennas in Fontana, California went extremely well with the 8 antennas tuned as per instructions for their allocated bands. Each was then partly disassembled, breaking down into 4 parts to allow for quick installation once they reached the island. Masts, rotators and cabling have all been finalized. Don Felix, VK4FUQ.
DXO-DX will be on the air from the 6th of January and now through to the 1st of February 2011. We'll have more DX news later on in this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. In a total reversal, a group of not-so-nearby neighbors trying to stop a Tivoli, Illinois ham from erecting 11 towers on his property say that they'll appeal to the ARRL for help. This after being denied a chance to officially offer arguments against the proposed cluster of ham radio towers on private property in the rural Tivoli Township. The Peoria County Planning and Zoning Commission approved the permit requested by Craig Thompson, K9CT, in July for 11 towers that range in height from 30 feet to 195 feet on property that he owns. Opponents of the tower are now searching for ways to slow or stop construction that's already underway. John Martin is the nearest neighbor of the property that's situated along the rolling farm fields and woodlands south of Tivoli. He tells the local newspaper that there's likely little that people in the area can do to stop the construction. He then goes on to say that those opposed to the towers are trying to form a grassroots organization to let the Amateur Radio Relay League know their position and to get them to agree to what Thompson plans to do is excessive. Martin adds that his hope is to convince the ARRL to show Thompson that it's in his best interest to scale back his plan. But Martin has also taken his opposition to the towers to the local community. He's posted flyers and bought space in the local weekly shopper newsletters that includes a photograph of the cluster of towers and the caption, "Stop this from happening in your town." Thompson's attorney is Fred Hobengarten, K1VR of Massachusetts. He's an expert in telecommunications law and helped convince the state's attorney's office that the county's zoning law was trumped by a Federal Communications Commission mandate that allows for construction of ham radio towers. Hobengarten and Thompson both say that the flyers are an exaggeration. So far, there's been no word from the ARRL if it's received a request from Martin to assist in stopping construction of Thompson's Tower Farm in rural Tivoli, Illinois. More on this story as it develops. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W6 ASH repeater serving Mountain View, California. Hams are not the only ones concerned about the lack of solar activity. Now, WNDU Television in South Bend, Indiana, has reported on the way in which lowered solar activity could drastically affect the world's climate. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jack Parker, W8ISH, has the rest of the details.
If you actively pursue DX, it may come as no surprise that sunspot activity over the past 2 years has been at an all-time low. According to a special report broadcast by South Bend meteorologist Mike Hoffman, we have had over 800 days with no sunspots, and that has not happened in 300 years. The last time Old Sol was this quiet was between 1645 and 1715, a period in time called the Maunder Minimum. Paintings from that era show wintry weather in areas where it's not typical, like carnivals held on frozen rivers and people playing on the ice. According to researchers, that period of weather was brutal. Hoffman's information comes from a recently published paper on sunspots in the Journal of Climate. Purdue University's Dr. Ernest Agee authored this report. He says civilizations almost perished due to the harshness of the winter. Dr. Agee writes that widespread crop failures caused famine around the world, and many villages were deserted. So, could that happen to the modern-day world? The Purdue professor says the sun is what powers the earth, so even the smallest changes on the sun can have an impact on our lives and our climate. Sunspot data only goes back to the year 1610. Many scientists correlate low sunspots with low temperatures in many parts of the world, and the best data shows that. Dr. Agee's paper delivers more bad news for amateur radio DXers and for modern-day society as well. In his Journal of Climate report, the Purdue researcher says the length of the solar cycle, the definition of a quiet period, the length of a quiet period for modern record, and the deepness of the quiet period indicate that something has, quote, upset the apple cart. As a result, he says, we are seeing new physics and new science emerging to explain what is happening. For the immediate future, scientists will continue to chart the solar activity and try to forecast a rosy outcome with hopes of increased sunspot activity, leading to a brighter future for the world and for those who live by the sunspots in amateur radio. Reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline, this is Jack Parker, WAISH.
The entire WNDU story can be both seen and read at tinyurl.com/28R7CE7. The FCC has denied a request for reconsideration from Mark S. Wintersoul, WB5NMZ of Montgomery, Alabama, who had sought to change his call sign to W5ER under the Vanity call sign system. The story is one that you've heard before. Wintersoul was amongst those who wanted to use the call when it became available from the Vanity call sign system. In this case, the call W5ER and Wintersoul filed for it under the Vanity program only to have his application dismissed because the FCC says it was filed too early. So Wintersoul appealed the initial decision where he argued that he was entitled to the call because it was canceled on September the 27th, 2008, and therefore should have been available when he filed his application on September the 27th, 2010. Now, in the FCC's November 9th letter affirming the dismissal of Wintersoul's initial application for the W5ER, the commission says that a canceled call sign does not become available for reassignment until after the two-year waiting period ends. Because the W5ER call was canceled on September the 27th, 2008, the call sign became available to the Vanity call sign system on September the 28th, 2010. Consequently, the FCC says that Wintersoul's application was properly dismissed because it was filed before the W5ER call sign became available to the Vanity call sign system. The current listed holder of the W5ER call sign is Edward J. Reynolds of Boston, Pennsylvania. The Australian Communications and Media Authority is proposing to continue to prohibit the supply, possession, and operation of jamming devices designed to deliberately interfere with public mobile telecommunications services, or PMTS. This includes 3G networks and equivalent services such as mobile WiMAX. According to the regulatory agency, since the original prohibition was made in March of 1999, technological, economic, and social developments have resulted in a proliferation of devices that consumers use for the purposes of wireless communication. ACMA says that there's a growing reliance on mobile connectivity for personal and business transactions. These changes make the case for continuing a ban even more compelling. And this is reflected in the new updated prohibition proposal. Another ad using what sounds like an emergency activation system tone has been reported. This time it's a television commercial for the recently released motion picture Skyline. According to a report in the trade publication Radio World, broadcast engineers have notified the magazine that the promotional spot for the film contains what sounded like EAS tones throughout. In an email reported by the trade publication, Lincoln Financial's media Barry Thomas told SBE engineers that he was able to decode the data. Thomas's email said that he believed it was a replay of the required monthly test that covered central Pennsylvania. Tom Ray, who is also chairman of SBE Chapter 15 in New York City, says the ad was illegal according to Part 11 of the FCC regulations. That section prohibits deceptive EAS transmissions and reads as follows. Quote, no person may transmit or cause to transmit the EAS codes or attention signal or a recording or simulation thereof in any circumstance other than in an actual national, state, or local emergency or authorized test of the EAS broadcast station licensees should also refer to 73-1217 of this chapter. This is a second reported use of EAS tones as a commercial marketing tool. You may recall a few months ago when an ARCO ad used what sounded like simulated EAS tones. Contest Rank is a new website from EA4ZK that contains volumes of information about contesting, including results, winners' call signs, scores, and much, much more. The site translates itself into five languages. These are German, English, Polish, Russian, and Spanish. The full web address is www.contestrank.com. Some names in the news. First up is Harry Heath, G5HF, whose story as a World War II voluntary radio interceptor has now been told by the Essex Chronicle newspaper. Heath was first licensed in 1932 as 2BZZ. He was issued the call sign of G5HF in 1933. Following the outbreak of the war, he moved to Chelmsford, where during the day he worked at Crompton on devices to neutralize magnetic mines, and during the evenings worked as a voluntary radio interceptor listening to the secret Nazi messages. The information he collected was passed to Bletchley Park for decoding. He later became the president of the Chelmsford Amateur Radio Society and retired from that role only a few weeks ago at the tender young age of 93. You can read more about this amazing ham radio World War II hero at tinyurl.com/23S86XE. And congratulations to our longtime friend and supporter, Chip Margelli, K7JA. This on his being appointed as the new Director of Advertising Sales and Marketing for CQ Communications, Inc. Margelli will join the CQ staff on December the 1st, and he will be responsible for advertising sales for CQ Amateur Radio, CQ VHF, and Popular Communications Magazine. He'll also take on the marketing efforts for all CQ Communications products. Chip Margelli brings to CQ more than three decades of experience in the amateur radio industry. He spent nearly 30 years with Yaesu and the past 4 years with Heil Sound. In addition to English, he's fluent in Japanese, German, and Spanish. An active ham for more than 45 years, K7JA is known worldwide as a champion contester, DXer, and DXpeditioner. He's currently active on all amateur bands from 160 through 1300 megahertz, and is a 2008 inductee into the CQ Amateur Radio Hall of Fame. Chip and his wife Janet, KL7MF, live in Garden Grove, California, just south of Los Angeles. In addition to amateur radio, K7JA enjoys photography and astronomy, and he's a marathon runner. Chip Margelli succeeds Don Allen, W9CW, CQ and CQ VHF Advertising Manager, and Arnie Posada, N2IQO, Popular Communications Advertising Manager, both of whom are retiring at the end of 2010. Advertising sales for World Radio Online will continue to be coordinated by John Cummer, WA2OJK. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. As we've said so many times of late, the changing of the guard continues with word of the passing of Milton Sullivan Jr., the former K8YDO of Washington, D.C. Sullivan, who was the former chief engineer at the R.L. Drake Company, passed away from a stroke October 28th at the age of 85. During his tenure at Drake, Sullivan oversaw the designs of most of the Drake ham radio gear, including the famed models 1A and 2B receivers, as well as all of the company's transceivers from the 4 line through the beginning of the 7 line. He retired from Drake in 1984 and entered the commercial satellite industry, first founding his own business and then working for Linton Electronics until his retirement in 1990. The Radio Society of Great Britain has declared its 2010 board elections as being invalid. This because two candidates share the same two nominators. This is not in accordance with the Society's election rules, and therefore the candidates were not properly nominated. As a result, the board has considered its options and has determined that the only course of action open to it is to declare the election as invalid. Given other requirements, the board will now co-opt both candidates as board members for a 12-month period until the next election in 2011, when the candidates may stand for election again. The regional election for Region 4 is unaffected and closes at midday on December the 2nd. The new 6-meter repeater has taken to the airwaves in the United Kingdom. This with word that the 5 Towns repeater group put its 6-meter machine on the air from the organization's site just west of Wakefield. The system uses the call sign of GB3WY. It operates on the European R50 channel pair, which equates to 50.800 and 51.300 megahertz and requires a continuous CTCSS tone of 82.5 hertz to access. Keeping an open ear for the signal from GB3WY could be a good beacon to let hams in the Americas know when the band is open across the Atlantic. The International Naval Contest will be held the second weekend of December. The contest runs from December the 11th at 1600 UTC to December the 12th at 1559 UTC. The bands used are 160 through 10 meters except for the warp band. The Moser single sideband is CW only. Electronic logs go to DF8LD at darc.de. And the results for the 2010 ARRL August UHF contest are now online. You can find them at www.arrl.org/contest-results-article. The European PSK Club invites amateur radio operators from all over the world to participate in the 5th annual PSK 63 QSO party. The objective of the competition is to establish as many contacts as possible between radio amateurs around the world by using the BPSK 63 mode. The contest will be held from 0000 UTC to 2400 UTC on Sunday, November the 21st. Complete rules and other information can be found online at tinyurl.com/39HBVNB. On the air, listen out for members of the Bethlehem, Georgia-based Barrow Amateur Radio Club, who will activate special event station WR4BC from 1700 UTC on December the 4th through 1700 UTC on December the 5th in celebration of the upcoming Christmas holiday. Operation will be on the primary HF band using single-side band CW RIDI and digital mode. A limited edition collectible QSL card will be issued, complete with the Bethlehem Christmas postcard to arrive before Christmas. More is online now at www.barrowhamradio.org. In DX, OL5Y will be active portable IM0 from La Maddalena Island in Sardinia on 15 meters during the CQWW DXCW contest November the 27th and 28th. This is a single operator, single band entry, QSL as directed on the air. IM3KIZ is expected to be active as 5H3OC from Tanzania in the near future. His operation will be on the HF band, and you can QSL via IM3DEI. PA1OKZ will be on the air from Jamaica at 6Y5NS through November the 26th. His operations will be on the HF band using single sideband and digital mode. QSL via PA1OKZ via eQSL or his call book address. DL7VOG is active as HK0GU/1 from Isla del Pirata, Colombia through November the 21st. Operations are on the HF bands using CW and RIDI. QSL via DL7VOG direct or by the Bureau. Lastly, KC0VKN will be operational portable TJ7 from St. Martin Island between December the 18th through the 21st. Its activity will be holiday style on 40 through 10 meters using CW depending on operating times and the opening. QSL via his home call sign. And finally this week, the story of how one citizen has taken communications with public officials to a new height. This by purchasing the internet domain name of the police department whose red light camera issued him a ticket. We have more in this report.
Most of the time, if you or I get a speeding ticket, we just grumble about it and pay the fine. Oh, we can fight it in court. For most people, those are the only two options. However, after receiving a $90 speeding ticket in Bluff City, Tennessee, Brian McCrary discovered a third. It seems that the Bluff City Police Department had forgotten to renew its internet domain name of BluffCityPD.com. It had expired, so McCrary bought the domain for $80. He then posted his side of the story, along with the information about speed traps in Bluff City, and that $250,000 per month the system was costing the town 1,500 residents. The police department had no idea their domain name had expired and that McCrary owned it. That was until October 8th, when reporters started calling them to ask about it. Bluff City Police Chief David Nelson says the city may approach McCrary about buying the domain back from him, but admits Chief Nelson the city's not very optimistic that a deal can be made. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, here trying to avoid the red light cameras in Los Angeles.
McCrary says that his goal is to get enough attention to put pressure on the local government to remove the traffic enforcement cameras in Bluff City. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Please don't forget that in association with the Newark Amateur Radio Society, that we're currently conducting a survey to determine where these weekly Amateur Radio Newsline reports are replayed on the air. If you're a bulletin station that transmits these weekly newscasts, or just a listener who has the following information, we'd like you to supply us the call sign of the repeater or bulletin station making the transmission, the frequency where it can be heard, the time and days of the week it's broadcast, the time zone, and the estimated audience you think it might have. Please email that information along with your name and call sign to arnschedule@gmail.com. Once again, that's arnschedule@gmail.com. As always, we thank you for your assistance with this survey. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ICF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, wishing you a happy Thanksgiving. 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2010, all rights are reserved.
This is Victor Echo 7, Lima, Tango Delta. VE7LPD, testing 1, 2, 3. This is Victor Echo 7, Lima, Tango Delta with an audio test. Audio test 1, 2, 3, VE7LPD.
RC2S, repeater controller, V5.282. Clock not set, clock not set. Ready. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Tiger Law to connect 10 able. Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
The time is 1:23 a.m. 7:3 and good night from the W2BL repeater. The time is 1:24 a.m. Good morning. This is the W2BL amateur radio repeater system. Set tonight at 8:30 W2BL repeater system.
Connected. Heard. Who? 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 You? Why?
2:34 a.m.
Heard. Who? 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 You? Why? Disconnected.
Time is 2:44 a.m. Good morning. Welcome to the W2BL repeater. Set tonight at 8:30. This is the W2BL amateur radio repeater system. W2BL repeater system. Good morning. Time is 3:10 a.m. Tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2BL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Set tonight at 8:30. This is the W2BL amateur radio repeater system. The time is 5:27 a.m. Good morning, W2BL repeater system.
Alpha Sierra Sierra.
Central Alpha Sierra Sierra. Stop you to HTV. Static crash on that one.
Hey, John, how are you? I figured you'd be out there. I haven't been talking the past few days. Like my ears are like backed up or something. They're clogged. It's painful. I may have to get them landed. So I've been, like, kind of listening at a very low volume. I haven't been talking because all I can hear is myself. And you know how annoying I can be.
So, today's a long day. tomorrow, halfway decent. But Wednesday, I'm only working until about 11:30, 12 o'clock. Go home, get the massage therapist, take a shower, go to sleep, get up at 10 o'clock, and head into 34th and 8th. Stage the truck and hang out until the parade is over the next day.
Wow, it sounds like you got quite a schedule ahead of you. You do a lot of driving. Kind of like me, worse than me, I think. I think you drive further than I do. But today you definitely are. I hope you get paid for the commute, too.
As I hit the Verrazano, I'm on the clock. So, 5:45 on the clock, it's ticking. Wednesday night, clock ticks as soon as I put the key in the ignition. And at midnight, switches over to double time and a half until I shut it off when I park it about 12:30, quarter to one on Thanksgiving.
Well, that works out good. I had to switch out, switch to the A50 machine. For some reason, your audio, it wasn't you. It was the audio dropped out when transferring. Unless the whole carrier dropped out. As soon as I heard you disappear, I went to the 850 and I heard everything you had to say. So I'm going to have to keep listening that way. But it's making it out here, though. I can hear it. Wow. You got it. That's good, though. That's good for you. That is a good thing. Ah, boy. So how far did you get now on your travels? You're in Staten Island?
Yep, yep. Washington Avenue, baby, exit 12. Heading out to 440 South. Go to the end of that. Fun, fun. Somebody's got to do it, I guess, right? I'm going to a, I'm going to a complete disaster. The machine that they tried to pick up was a little electric 34-foot booms, you know? Got those big battery compartments on the side. Just the email yet. Battery compartment door hanging off. Couldn't pick it up. Great. It means I gotta pull all these batteries. They weigh about 135 pounds apiece. I gotta pull all four of them out, rehang the door, and put all the four batteries back in. I'm just looking so forward to this.
I guess those are those huge batteries that you see, that they're like the size of four batteries, each one of them. That's what I'm thinking. But wow. But if you guys, the guy went to pick it up, so you mean like the guy went to, they're done with it, and you guys were taking it back and it was dead? Or they're trying to still use it, and they just can't get it running because the batteries don't hold the charge.
Nah, it's not what it was. We were going to pick it up. Joe, I'm going to the big, big bus depot on Staten Island. Huge bus depot. And that's in the final stages. So. Ay-yi-yi. Anyway. That's what I gotta do, and then I got a bunch of little technical field service bulletins I gotta do, and a bunch of other stuff over there, so I'll be there a good part of the day. Such is life. Good old static crash island.
Good morning, and to EB.
John, the second John. Johnny number two. Oh, boy. You know, I'm surprised if the guy was just trying to pick it up. I'm surprised there's no way you could, like, throw jumpers on that just to get it going until he gets it onto his trailer or whatever they take it on. I'm just kind of surprised that the guy picking it up couldn't figure out a way to get it on the machine. All right, EB, over to you, and you send it to HCB.